All right, welcome to the Sports Ethos Los Angeles Chargers podcast. I'm here, as always, joined by Brandon and Shane. How are you guys doing?
I'm doing awesome.
You're a good
Just kidding, I'm not awesome.
I like this.
No, you know what? I am awesome. it's always a good day when I get to talk to you guys.
Aw, thank you.
Same here. I am sick still. Well, I don't know if I'm still sick. I just still have symptoms. But I mean, it's been like 5 days. But we have flu game round two. First it was Brandon, then it was my, then now it's me. So that's fun.
So it's making its round. So we know who's next.
Oh no.
Nah.
We'll see.
I dodged it.
You dodged a bullet.
And I had the flu in January, February, and we did shows, I think. I don't know. But anyways.
Were you sick at that time, Shane? Or?
Sometime. I don't remember when, but I know I was.
Yeah. This sucks.
So wait. What exactly are you going through? Because I missed it.
Like cold / flu?
Mostly cold. Yeah, so yours is genuinely a flu game.
No, this is genuine. It's just pretty much a cold. I mean, Shane has brought me soups and medicine. Thank you, Shane.
So You're welcome.
Live like 10 minutes from each other.
Well, yeah.
Jalapeno soup, baby. I haven't had it yet. I had the creamy tomato or the creamy chicken noodle.
That sounds good.
You told me.
Get
spicy chicken noodle. I was like, are you sure?
Oh my god. That'll clear your sinuses real fast.
That's what I'm saying,
yeah.
Bro.
Not exactly. But anyways.
We're here to do a draft recap.
Yeah.
Woo. It might as well be just like this week in the NFL, because I mean things are happening even now. So tonight there was just some news. So
yes, there was. How do you guys want to start? Do you guys want to do the QB rankings? Do you guys want to do some individual teams, grade some drafts?
We can do QB rankings.
Yeah, Shane's been dying for this.
I've been waiting to unveil them.
Okay, Shane, so recap us with what... You're going to hear me cough a lot during this spot. Shane, recap us with what your rankings were before during the combine and then what they were now.
I'll tell you my original. Yeah. So, before the draft, it was from worst to best, the first round guys, J.J. McCarthy, Drake May, Caleb Williams, Jaden Daniels, Michael Penix, Bo Nix. That's not an evaluation of their talent. That's just how well I think their skill set would transition to the NFL. That's pretty much what it was. And now the list is a little bit different because obviously some guys go to situations that cater well to them and some go to places where that's not so much the case. So that being said, the list didn't change a ton. However, there was one guy who jumped a few spots. So, first of all, for me now, in last place is Drake May, which pains me to say because I think he has one of the higher ceilings of all these guys, but he's going to a team where I really don't trust the coaching staff. And, I mean, it's just... Based on everything we're hearing from an organizational sense, the Patriots are just kind of a mess right now, like upstairs. And, you know, he doesn't have many receiving targets to work with. It just feels like it's just going to be a train wreck. He's like because he's definitely a guy who needs to be refined a bit. I don't think he's going to get that there. So, to me, he's last. Fifth is going to be Jaden Daniels, who I had third originally, because he, you know, he's not a big guy. And he is, he likes to run. He's pretty physical. And he's going to a team with a terrible offensive line and an offensive coordinator who should not be a coach, period, in any league. yet here he is. So I don't, I don't think that's going to go over too well. The only reason I have him above Drake May is because at least he has guys like Terry McLaurin. He's got somewhat of a run game to help him out with Eckler. And what's his name? Robinson. So then fourth is still going to be Caleb Williams, because the talent is there, but and yeah, he got weapons. Great. I don't care. I mean, if you look at, he has a defensive head coach who doesn't really seem to know what he's doing, I don't think, and an offensive coordinator in Shane Waldron who, in my opinion, really doesn't fit him very well. Or, in other words, let me rephrase that. I don't think Caleb fits in well with Shane Waldron and what he is probably going to want to do. It's very much a West Coast style offense. Caleb is much better in like an air raid kind of system. So that just seems like kind of a weird fit. But, you know, he's so talented that I think it'll probably be, I don't know. It'll probably be okay, I think. Number three is the guy who moved up the most. I can't believe I'm saying this, but J.J. McCarthy. Now, the reason I say this is because he is a perfect fit. Not perfect, but he's an ideal fit for Minnesota's offensive system. And he has tons of weapons to work with. I mean, Justin Jefferson, Jordan Addison, TJ Hawkinson, pretty good offensive line. You know, there's not a lot he has to overcome, and he's in like a situation as far as coaching staff that I think is perfect for him. So, you know, I think he, ironically, since I just got rid of him, I think he kind of ends up in like the Kirk Cousins tier, you know, like he's just efficient, does fine, but not like great, not going to win you a Super Bowl probably, especially in that division where you have the Lions and Packers, who I think are going to be duking it out for next few years. And then my last two didn't change. I still have Penix at two. Really don't understand why Atlanta drafted him, considering the whole Kirk thing, but that's not Penix's fault. You know, I think the offense and the way that it's structured right now down in Atlanta, it's kind of similar to what he had at UW, where, you know, he had like that one good receiver, couple of nice tight ends, running backs, solid offensive line. Yeah, that's exactly what he needed, and that's what he's going to get if he ever plays. You know, we'll see. And number one, I think, is Bo Nix still. I mean, I think he's a perfect fit with Sean Payton. You know, if you watch him, he kind of looks like a tall Drew Brees. Not that he's as good as him by any means, but you know, where he's very efficient. He but not in a way that he's just a game manager like a lot of guys. He can be athletic, he can make plays if he needs to, but that's not his MO. That's not what he's going to first. And that's exactly what Sean Payton wants. And you know, honestly, I think the only thing really holding that one back at least for me, is just the fact that, you know, when you look at his division, it's, you know, you got to compete with Andy Reid and Mahomes, Herbert and Harbaugh. You know, and the Raiders obviously don't have the quarterback, but that's a pretty good roster. So, you know, that's going to be challenging. But just on an individual basis, for his individual success, I think he'll be pretty solid. Probably a tier two guy, not like one of the, you know, top five, six guys. I don't really see that happening. But you know, in that like top 10 to 12 range where you're like, yeah, we could win with this guy, you know. So, yeah, that's my updated rankings. I feel like I'm talking to a wall since you're both muted.
Before we go to the reaction to the rankings, which I don't think are very bad overall, Brandon, what was your reaction to Penix 2 Atlanta?
I mean, I think it's just what Shane said. There's a million things you can say. And it's like on draft night, even though I was at a concert, I was saying, what the hell are the Falcons doing? But it's simple. It's a head scratcher. It doesn't make sense. You gave Kirk Cousins a 4-year, $180 million deal. You paid him to be basically your franchise guy for the next few seasons. And everybody's like, oh, well, Penix might get a chance because Kirk just came off a bad injury. It's like, that's not the point. Kirk is that he's going to be the starter in Atlanta. You don't, and the thing is, Penix is 24. He's our age. You don't draft a 24-year-old quarterback, especially in the first round, in the top 10, to bench him for 3-4 years. So it doesn't make sense. Atlanta's got
plenty of project either.
He's like, it's not going to be a project. Oh my God, the wind's coming through my window. He's not a project. It's not like he's, you know, needs a ton of work. I mean, the real concerns about him were his health, throughout his college career. But obviously, you know, he silenced a lot of people the season he had last year. It's just, the situation doesn't make sense. And hell, we even saw on draft night, I'm blanking out on the Atlanta GM, what his name is, but he had to prove to Arthur Blank, there was the video of him literally talking to Arthur Blank, like, why did you pick him? For what? Like, you know, it's like, you know, he's like, you know, he looks nervous explaining to Arthur Blank, well, you know, because, you know, X, Y, Z, it's like, okay, but what are you doing, man? Like, nothing about it makes sense. Nothing. And I like Penix a lot. He moves down that board for me. I don't think he stays at 2. He moves down the board for me just because his situation is so bizarre that it's like we might never see him start, which is crazy to think about. But
honestly, I could really see, not that I want this to happen, but I could really see Kirk Cousins coming back and re-injuring himself, or like, you know, being just so awful after the Achilles injury that he just gets benched.
I hate to say that I'm thinking that happens, but that's the only reason in my mind you draft Michael Penix there. And that's probably what the Atlanta GM probably said. It's like, hey, we don't know how healthy Kirk is going to be. And, you know, he's a little bit older, but it's like,
then why sign him to the 4-year, $180 million deal?
Exactly. So it's like, it's like, when you think about it, it's like, that might be his only excuse out of that one. But then, yeah, Blank probably said, well, I'm the one writing the damn check. So, you know, hey, you got to realize you're playing with my money here. But it's kind of just, it's a really weird situation. I'm still trying to think of a plausible route, or a plausible idea or thought that they might have had in that war room to justify taking him.
I so wish he would have gone to the Raiders.
Yeah.
That would have been...
It would have made a lot more sense.
Dude, Dude, imagine him to Devontae. That'd be sick.
I think I mocked Penix to the Raiders in one of the yeah. And it was like, because I was like,
yeah,
that it does, it makes sense. Because who the hell is the Raiders starting quarterback? Aiden O'Connell? Yeah, all right.
It's gonna be Gardner Minshew.
Yeah, well, you know, like, you know what I mean. It's like, my God, they're having a freaking, you know, it's a QB battle between Gardner Minshew and Aiden O'Connell. Really? Really? Vegas? Really?
And Penix versus Bo Nix twice a year.
I love that. That's
continue.
That's a lot of fun.
Mm-hmm. That'd be fun. But yeah. Never mind. Instead he goes to the garbage NFC South.
Yeah, I don't get it.
Yeah. No, I it's a head scratcher to say the least, but anyways. But here's the thing. Big picture, when I was thinking about all these rankings, you know, when I look at all six of these guys, I don't think any of them win a Super Bowl.
No, I can't see it.
I really don't. You might be thinking like, well, how do you know? It's way too early. Yeah, fair. You know, and it's such a great class. Yes, it is. But we know, historically speaking, three of these guys are going to be a bust, probably. And, I mean, there's only, like, really one exception to that, which is 2020 with those quarterbacks, where he had, like, I guess, like, four of the top five guys be hits. But, I mean, that's an anomaly. So, yeah, I mean, you know, just look at their situations. I mean, Bo Nix, even though he's my number one, like, yeah, good luck. Good luck winning a Super Bowl. Good luck winning your division.
Yeah, it's Denver. It's like, do we really think they're going anywhere? It's like, they're gonna, if Bo Nix makes them better, but are they really going anywhere? No. It's Denver.
Right. And same with, you know, oh, what if Caleb Williams is great? Yeah, okay, well, what about Green Bay and Detroit? I mean, yeah, guess what? They're not going anywhere. So, I don't know. And you just look around the rest of the league. I mean, I just look at guys like Mahomes, Stroud. I think Josh Allen would win a ring before any of these guys. Burrow, if he's healthy. Lamar. I mean, you know, Jalen Hurts in the NFC.
Yeah. I mean,
pick your guy. Like, you know, so, anyways, I know that's kind of a bold take that's going to unfold over the next, you know, 15, 20 years, but which is kind of crazy to think about, but, you know, that's just a thought that I had.
Who do you guys think won the draft? Like, what teams did you really like? Who, like, stood out for you guys?
Am I biased? Can I be biased?
I wonder who Brandon's going to say.
I think it's right. Go ahead. I don't think it's biased. Yeah. I think it's right.
Because, bro, to get two... in many people's eyes, maybe not for some people, but for many people, the top two cornerbacks in the draft, well, first and second round, and then to add, then you get absolute value in Jeremiah Trotter in round five, Trotter Jr., and you get Will Shipley, explosive running back, fits what Philly wants to do, need that pass catching slash, you know, kind of speed, you know, running back out of the backfield, can do both. Basically, he's your DeAndre Swift. He's the better blocking version, like better pass blocking version of DeAndre Swift. And to pair that with Saquon Barkley is nuts. They get Jalen Hunt. I remember hearing his name in college, but I didn't know much about him. But this guy was like converted safety. The guy's massive. Like, for his size, he can move. He's a project, but Vic Fangio wanted him for a reason. So I don't mind that at all. And then, I mean, hell, look at what they got in the, what was it? I think also in the fifth round, I think it was fifth. They get Trevor Keegan, the guard from Michigan. Didn't allow a sack at all last season. Which is, you know, again, all, another insane pickup, you know, great value late in the draft. But the two big hits are Cooper DeJean and Quinyon Mitchell. Both guys, a lot of people thought were one and two, you know, in this draft. And I mean, both are freaky athletic. They can do pretty much anything you ask a corner to do. They can play zone. They can play man. They can play, you know, they have great instincts. They're freaky athletic, freaky fast. Both can jump out of the building. Cooper DeJean, you know, you ever see the movie White Men Can't Jump? It's like, yeah, Cooper DeJean is literally that. The guy literally has hops for his height. I mean, there's clips of him in high school, like his chin was on the rim dunking a basketball. Like, so to add that to a defense that now has CJ Gardner-Johnson back, Brandon Graham returning again. You know, you needed somebody in that linebacker room because you didn't really have anybody for next season. So adding Jeremiah Trotter Jr., he's going to basically play. He should play or get opportunities to play right away. And if he's anything like his father, that's terrific for, you know, for Philly. So I can't see a reason. I don't think, remember, Slay, Bradbury, they're both older. Slay doesn't have much left in the tank, even though he's still good. Bradbury, I mean, he had one bad year last year. I hated him last year, but I'm willing to give him one more year and see what happens. Maybe rotate him out. But Quinyon Mitchell is going to start. And, you know, that's basically what it is. Opposite of Slay. And then Cooper DeJean is probably going to split time because he can play, you know, that slot corner role. He can play safety. And he can be basically your third corner when you need him to be in the game. So Cooper DeJean is going to be your Swiss Army knife. A DB. So I can't say enough about what my boys did. I mean, listen, it's, you know, I understand I get to be biased quite often, but I don't think it's biased. Look at what they did. They hit an absolute freaking home run and then some. Not even a home run. It was a grand slam. So, you know, I can't. I mean, I like what we did. I like what Washington did. I even like what the Giants did. Cowboys did nothing. So, haha, funny. You suck.
Cowboys were the big losers, I think.
Yeah. So you know what? Hey, suck to suck, Dallas. I love what we did. I love what Green Bay did. Green Bay to me had a pretty good draft. I think it's very underrated what they did. Adding, you know, Javon Bullard. I think people didn't give him enough credit at Georgia. He was really good safety. For the Bulldogs defense. And listen, anybody that comes out of Georgia is going to be killing it in the NFL. So, you know, I like what certain teams did, but I could be biased, but I don't think it is. I really think that we hit a massive home run in this draft.
Yeah.
Shane, what about you? Who won for you?
I'll say like my top four or five. Definitely Philly, Green Bay. That's, they usually are good. Let's see, who else? Pittsburgh wasn't bad, I thought. Those are like the three that jump out to me. I liked what the Rams did.
Yeah.
Which, yep. You know, hate to say it, but but you know, I gotta recognize game when I see it. And yeah, I did like what Seattle did as well. I mean, there weren't a lot of like sexy picks by any means, but it was definitely good depth pieces that they needed, I think. And then let's see, who else to round out my top five? I would say the Bears, but like, I don't think they have a competent enough coaching staff to use them effectively. So I kind of don't want to say that. But you know, I've also seen Vikings a lot from different people, but I don't like how much they traded up, like, and for seemingly no reason. I don't know. Who would be my fifth? Or did I name five? I guess I did. Anyways. Yeah, and then the big loser, I think, was definitely Dallas. Another team that a lot of people seem to think did horribly is Tennessee. I'm not quite there. I think they were fine. I mean, it wasn't like anything crazy, but...
Yeah, they weren't terrible.
But, yeah. I also saw a lot of people sort of scratch their head at the Chargers. I like what they did, personally.
They were actually on my big winners list. I mean, look what they did here. They grabbed a bunch of receiving help. Started with Joe Alt, which you could say, why not go receiver in round one? I think they did a good job getting talent at receiver where there's depth. And I think you'd rather protect Justin Herbert. And they picked up a receiver today as well, if I'm not mistaken. They picked up DJ Chark on a deal as well. So their focus was to grab receiver, and that's what they did. So receiver and a talented offensive lineman. I don't think you can ask for much more there.
And I mean, look at Harbaugh and his track record. Name one elite receiver who he's had.
Yeah, not many.
Yeah, and he's been successful. That's not how he does it, which is very ironic since he's a quarterback, but, you know. I'm just saying. But anyways, so yeah, no, I didn't mind it at all.
I had a few teams on my list. I can't remember. I just remember that, like I said, Green Bay stood out to me. Of course, my Birds were big winners. I'm trying to remember. I had like two more teams. Yeah, well, I mean, Cardinals were obvious. I mean, they hit home runs too. Well, actually, yeah, because one of my friends is a Cardinals fan. I congratulated him on his first two picks.
Thank God, overall, trade that first round pick. They need Marvin Harrison bad. So
they needed him badly.
I think overall, like, pretty much everybody did pretty solid in the draft, other than the Cowboys and, you know, a couple other random picks here and there.
I'll be honest, this draft was pretty chalk, though. Like, I really liked what a lot of teams did, but there wasn't many shockers, really. I think the Rams clearly were my big winner. I mean, the Rams went off to me. I mean, if you're talking about replacing Aaron Donald and you're bringing in Jared Verse and Braden Fisk to pair up with Kobe Turner. They brought in Blake Corum, who's going to help back up Kyron Williams. It sucks for fantasy, but it's good for them. I like what they did, but it was really, honestly, just a chalk draft overall.
You know what I was really thinking?
Fantasy,
you know,
was their top priority.
Oh, absolutely.
You know what's funny? If there was one pick I think I really loved a lot that people aren't kind of talking about a lot. I mean, there's so many players that got so many value. Like, of course, I could say any of my ducks, like Dorlis going to Atlanta, or, you know, Bucky Irvin going to Tampa, because Bucky Irvin to Tampa is pretty damn good. But especially where they got him. But No, not many people are talking about this. And I said this during the combine, that whoever gets him was going to get a really damn good player. Keon Coleman going to Buffalo is massive. Oh. Keon Coleman to Buffalo is massive.
Also, what a funny kid. But go ahead.
Oh, he's, because, I mean, Keon Coleman has this, like, I don't want to say that, you know, if you could build a receiver in a lab, it'd be him. But damn it, man. The guy is like, what, 6'3", 210, 215?
He looks like a Buffalo receiver.
Yeah. But the thing is, like, he's fast. Like, the one thing, like, I remember at the draft, he blew me away because he was the one that ran the gauntlet perfectly, straight down the line. Like, I've never seen somebody run so straight on a line, catch it, like, make that,
so well composed.
Yeah, make that drill look so, because if a receiver can make that drill look easy, those are guys that look at him like, yep, that's the guy I want. That right there. Because if he can keep his body composed, that's one of the biggest things you want in receivers. Hey, how do you keep, like, that shows me how you fight for a ball in the air. You know, what's your body control like? What's, you know, how are you maneuvering, you know, on a route pretty much. So, and then for him to have sticky hands, because my God, we know what he did at Florida State, and we know what he did at the combine. His numbers were blowing people away. Like, everything he does is so damn good. People don't talk about it enough. I mean, I've seen some people say it, but not nearly as many as they should. I thought he was going to end up somewhere in the first round. For him to drop into two is, I mean, there were so many guys that could have went first round, obviously, but there was a lot of first round guys that were in the second round. But Keon Coleman for the Bills, man, especially after losing Stephon Diggs, you know, now you get your new number one, and to get him, and not only for him to be a good kid, a funny kid, but for him to be the kind of receiver that we all know he is, we watched him play enough, that is a home run and a half for the Bills in that offense.
Why do you guys think the Cowboys struggled today, or through the draft, I mean?
Well, you know, after Jerry says, we're going all in, and then you get no free agents, and you have, and, you know, I mean, you lost a lot of guys at key positions, like tackle, center, edge rusher, and then, you know, just sort of fill some of those with, like, okay guys, reaches, in my opinion, is like, okay, what, you know, it's like, what are you doing, Jerry?
On top of that, their biggest move is getting Zeke again, and they said they're going to do a running back by committee again.
Wow, yeah, and a washed up Zeke at that.
Yeah. I don't know. It's
yeah, their quote unquote number one running back on the roster is Rico Dowdle. So yeah, have fun with that, Dallas. You don't have a running back. Nice. So what? We're gonna rely on Dak Prescott to throw for 5,000 yards next year, and throw 50 times a game.
And 50 interceptions.
Yeah,
maybe he'll break James Winston's record.
That's what you want. Like, you think that lightning is gonna strike twice and he's gonna have another MVP season? I got news for you. Ain't gonna happen. So
with a worse O line, yeah.
Yeah, it ain't happening. It ain't gonna happen again. So, you know, I want to count on Dallas so bad, but I also, it's like, I know a few Dallas fans who are really been actually, ironically, been nice to me, and because I've known them for a while now, and I'm like, bro, I'm like, listen, I would take any chance I could to crap on your team, but at the same time, I'm like, man, you're letting a 95-year-old crypt keeper run your football team? That's pretty funny.
God damn it, you know, I can't laugh through this cold, but that's funny.
It's like Jerry Jones. Oh, God. It's like, man, you've got Jerry Jones. Like, you know, 30 years ago, Jerry Jones was fine. This isn't 30 years ago. Jerry Jones is, you know, 90 now, pretty much. I mean, he's not 90, you know what I mean, though. Like, he's like, have you heard some of the things he said? He's incoherent. He really can't make a decision anymore to save his life.
The most coherent thing he said is that he's the 26th best team in the league.
Yeah, at least he knew that. Yeah, but that was probably off it. Like, I hate to be political, but my God, Jerry Jones reminds me of Joe Biden. Like,
I was just gonna say that.
Hey, honestly, that was pretty funny. Even if you're not political, that's fucking funny.
But it's like it's true. They both can't utter a sentence or three words in a row without stumbling. They don't make any sense. They ramble on. They're easily irritable. I mean, hell, their bedtime is what, 6 p.m.? You know, but Jesus before Christ, you know, Jesus so Christ. like, come on, man! Like, they shake hands with ghosts as they walk off stages. You know, like, come on, man! It's like Jerry Jones needs to know at some point, man. You got to give it up. It's like you got to let someone else run the team and someone that knows more than you. But Jerry Jones is stubborn. Jerry Jones is, you know, it's Jerry's world. He built that stadium. This is my Cowboys team. I love Dak Prescott. I brought Zeke back because I still think this is 2016. You know, so I
love is a strong word when both of the QB and the head coach have 1 year left on their contract, but okay.
Well, yeah, but you know, but Jerry Jones is just, Jerry Jones has lived the past 30 years on repeat. Where he's stuck in 1994. So it's, you know, it's just like, you know, Dallas fans, you know, seem to think that, oh yeah, every year, oh, this our year. Yeah. Where on your team do you think is going to be a spark? You did nothing in the draft. You did nothing in free agency. You lost key pieces. Do you really think you're going to win the NFC East next year? I don't think so. So, you know, cause you know who will? Probably Philadelphia. Hate to break it to you, Cowboys fans. That's what it is. Hell, I even think the damn Giants, because the Giants actually have a defense now. Or hell, like
they don't have a quarterback.
They don't have a quarterback. Neither does Dallas. Jesus. So.
Oh my God, like, Dallas slander, bro. Where have we gone to, bro? Jesus.
Yeah, but it's like, you know, you gotta feel bad for like Dallas fans. Who have, like, listen, I don't feel bad for most Dallas fans because they still live like it's 1994 and they still want to brag about how many rings they have and weed and boys and all this stuff. But, bro, your team sucks. They're gonna continue to suck. And you're highly last year with winning a division. Good job. Hang the banner. Have fun. But you're still trash for about 30 years. So, you know, when you can actually do something in you know, in this decade or in this, you know, new century, you know, since Y2K, let us know. Until then, shut up. Your team's a failure.
I love how this is a Chargers pod, and we talked about the Chargers for 5 minutes.
Well, no, we'll get to them.
The Chargers were good.
Yeah, I want to get to that. I definitely want to get to that. But yeah, listen, I got to get my Cowboys hits in because I took a lot of hits last year, and last year was a very bad year for me. So now it's my turn to go right back at it since we've had a great draft, great offseason, and I love it. So,
okay, Brandon, go off about the Chargers. Talk about what they did during the draft. What do you like? What do you think? I mean, really, there isn't much. But it's pretty good.
I mean, I wouldn't say that there isn't much, but, you know, but I mean, Joe Alt is a big need. I mean, I thought Joe Alt might have ended up going to the Giants, but I guess they want to give Evan Neal another shot. Joe Alt is obviously the best offensive lineman in the draft. You need offensive line. You don't want to get Justin Herbert killed. You want Justin Herbert to succeed. You know, and he, I mean, now he's given plenty of options to Ladd McConkey as a second round pick. That's almost like a Keon Coleman pick to me. Ladd McConkey could have been an end of a first round guy, and he went into the second round, early second round. So that was great. The value they got in the third round, getting Junior Colson, who was probably the best linebacker on the board at that point. But probably even could have gone in the second round, and you got him in the third. It's really impressive. I believe it was what? It was like midway into the third. It wasn't even like early in the third. It was midway through the third. That's huge. Cam Hart. I mean, Cam Hart's a little bit of a project pick because they questioned, I think, his motor a little bit. But for a fifth rounder, Cam Hart, Notre Dame, you know, captain at Notre Dame, really, really good there. You know. And to end the draft with two receivers where it's like, you know their names. Like, well, Cornelius Johnson's one. But Brendan Rice, his story, I mean, we know who he is because we know his father, obviously. Brendan Rice should not have been a seventh-round pick. That's an injustice. Brendan Rice should have gone in probably the fourth or fifth round. And the fact, and I don't care about, like, oh, well, you know, it's just because of his name. I'm like, no, go back and watch the USC games. He was probably their best receiver. You know, he might not have made every catch. You know, his numbers aren't eye popping, but he made the clutch catches, and he still has speed, and like he's gonna be just fine the next level. Or at least he should be. Now he's got he's got Justin Herbert throwing him the ball, so he should be just fine. Brendan Rice should not have been a seventh round pick. But, like, the Chargers, to me, I mean, looking through this draft, this is a B-plus. This is a B-plus, I think. First three rounds are absolute hits. You know, because everybody kind of knew that Joel might have been the pick had he been there for the Chargers. So that's kind of just like, it was like Caleb Williams to the Bears. We kind of knew. Ladd McConkey was definitely something I didn't expect. For them, but that was pretty good. That to me, that's like, you know, I always say home runs. You know, when we talk about draft, like, you know, who hit a home run? I'm like, okay, that's a solid double to start the inning right there. Colson's another good one. And then of course to have Cam Hart and to kind of top it off towards the end with Rice, yeah, I think it's a B+. It's bordering on A-, but I think it's a B+ draft for the Chargers. I think they really did well. They got a lot of positions in need. You filled some wide receiver holes. I mean, man, you also filled the injury holes. Like, you know, the team was heavily injured, and they have been for the past few seasons. And now you fill that with, you know, Brendan Rice at your wide receiver spot, which is going to be, and that's going to be a cure-all for Justin Herbert. Have fun throwing to him. You know, that's going to be really nice. You know, and to just have, you know, you shore up that defense because your defense let you down a lot last year. Those fourth quarter collapses were no joke. Junior Colson is going to help out in that regard, and Cam Hart to an extent. But
I'm not having the worst coach in the NFL, but
well, that doesn't help too. But you know, the players, you know, at some point the players didn't make enough plays too. You know, so it goes hand in hand. But
oh yeah.
Yeah, so I think they got a solid B+ from me. I like what they did. They addressed all their positions, pretty much all their positions of need. And the thing is, when they did address those positions, they really hit on their picks. So that's a B+ for me right there.
Shane, your thoughts?
Yeah, that's about where I'm at, too. Yeah, like B+. I mean, you know, it's – I think they got good – I think they got really good value every place that they picked. You know, and big topic of conversation with a lot of people was, well, you know, why not take a receiver or a skill guy or whatever? And, you know, like I said, that's not really how Harbaugh does things. And he, you know, he's been around this league and just this sport in general for a long time. He, you know, he knows what he wants. So, yeah, I mean, you know, and the other thing with all too is look at this division. I mean, you got Chris Jones, Max Crosby, a lot of really good pass rushers that you're going to be going up against four times a year. You know, yeah, build up that line, protect the playmakers, and not just them, but you know, you look around the rest of the AFC. I mean, you know, you got Sam Hubbard, you got who else? Patrick Queen.
Miles
Garrett. Yeah, I forgot about him. I don't know how, but it's
a conference, so yeah.
Right, and yeah, so yeah, you can never have too many good offensive linemen. So yeah, I like it. You know, not definitely not like the flashiest draft, but you know, I don't think anyone was thinking it would be. You know, just again looking at Harbaugh and his track record and the types of guys he likes. It's I was like, yeah, that's not gonna happen. But yeah, just getting what you need, and I think they're in much better shape coming into this season, certainly more so than last year. But you know, we'll see. It's gonna be an interesting year, I think.
Any final thoughts before we do X-Men Days of Future Past?
I don't think so. Can everybody stop handing the Chiefs these great picks?
Oh yeah. Well
Xavier
yeah.
Worthy to the place I mocked him at. Actually no, I mocked him above that. Yeah, I did, but still.
Yeah, but see, I thought he was in Miami.
What
I don't get is everybody's flipping out about the Chiefs picking Xavier Worthy. But it's like Xavier Worthy, that's where he was basically gonna go all along, was around that range.
Right.
Like
I believe
in the mock I did with my friend before we did our mock on the show was I think I had Xavier Worthy going to the Chiefs anyway. So I'm not surprised that he really went there. Like, you know, but the thing is I was like, oh, it's unfair. I'm like, well, no, you should have just drafted him sooner. That's your fault. That's a you problem, not the Chiefs problem. Like, you know, it's
the problem, you know, is the Bills. Just saying, we'll make this trade. Like, okay.
Oh yeah, it's like, yeah, you know,
we're just
gonna keep forfeiting our you know franchise future to the Chiefs every year. We can't. Hell, if you can't beat them in the playoffs, you know they figured, hey, well, we're not gonna beat them in the draft anyway. So you know what? We're just gonna cave into to Chiefs supremacy, Chiefs kingdom, and just give them whatever they want because we can't beat them. So, you know. I don't, you know, the Bills don't make sense to me, but hey, Keon Coleman, like, that's why I'm thinking he's going to be every bit as advertised because they're going to need him to be. So, you know, hey, I mean, it kind of did work out when you think about the Bills did end up with Keon Coleman. And that's I kind of thought he would end up there. So, you know, it did work out kind of. But yeah, you can't be forfeiting pretty much your future to the Chiefs. Like it's like that much like that, and then complaining. You know, everybody complains that how could the Chiefs do this? So it's like, well, yeah, because Buffalo is Buffalo. So
yeah, it's great.
Also, do we have any thoughts on Justin Fields, the new kick returner?
Oh God, that's what I was trying to remember. Jesus,
Taysom Hill 2.0.
God, I mean,
God have mercy on our souls. Really? Like kick returner?
Like, can we please that actually not have been a conversation? Can we please find out that they were just joking around about that? Like,
dude, I want to see it now.
Oh, we're gonna please let us at least see it once in the preseason.
Oh, dude, God, I mean, listen, like, I like the new kickoff rules and I love how we're gonna see that. But I can't imagine Justin Fields receiving the ball and having to try to run for his life. I mean, listen, he should be used to running for his life. He played behind the Bears offensive line. But I mean, like, so, you know, it shouldn't be new to him scrambling and trying to find, you know, room to run. But, God, man, do you really want to kill your quarterback? Well, your backup quarterback? You really, and the thing is now, then they also declined the 5th-year option on him. So they're just saying, hey, this is like 1 year for you. We're going to be like, hey, you know, we're going to try you out pretty much as like kick returner / quarterback. Like, we're going to try to break you, Justin, because we believe in Russell Wilson, apparently. So,
you know, $1 million of him.
God, I really hope Justin Fields survives the season because that's the first thing we're hearing about Justin Fields, you know, along with the declining 5th-year option, then, oh boy, Justin, I pray for your health and well-being this season.
All right, let's do X-Men Days of Future Past. Brandon, I'll let you go first on this. Give me your review. This is your first time watching it, correct?
Yes, it is.
All right, go ahead.
I remember, because Days of Future Past has always been on like FX. When FX shows movies, they for some reason get stuck on showing the only X-Men movie that exists to FX. So, I've seen the scene where Wolverine meets the younger Professor X. So you know, I remember that scene kind of. I love, you know, just blending the timelines. I like how they just, you know, yeah, I like how really, you know, Wolverine is a focal point, because you, I mean, listen, Wolverine is, you know, when you think of X-Men, you think of Wolverine, but, you know, at the same time, it's cool to just have a movie where it's just like, hey, let's just have Wolverine go back in time and, you know, do this, you know, stuff, kind of help us change our history, and avoid a very dark future. So it's just really cool that it took pretty much the original trilogy and the, you know, and prequel, well, basically prequel.
The old and the new.
Yeah, to blend them and to give them kind of a nice kind of tie to it, a nice little bow on it, so to speak. And I mean, you know, you can definitely tell by the time this movie came out that the new cast with, you know, Fassbender and McAvoy and the rest of them, like, the, you know, the old cast knows their role, obviously, because they've been doing it now for quite a few movies. But you can definitely tell by this point, it feels like they had, like, everybody was settled into their roles. Everybody knew, you know, everybody had a part to play, and they knew how to play it well. It just feels like, you know, I can see why this movie got, you know, a high rating on Rotten Tomatoes, and it got a high, you know, high mark after kind of, you know, how Last Stand had flopped, and they said that, oh, you know, First Class was a really, really good one, and this, you know, really followed it up really well. I was like, yeah, it definitely did. It's, God, it's crazy to think that, you know, some of the things, even though I knew the story somewhat going in, obviously, because you know the X-Men story is going into it, I knew the story somewhat, but I just couldn't help but smile by seeing just the little kind of nods to certain things that would, you know, obviously that would come to define the X-Men, you know, to see with that history of where they started doing with that 1973, to see where their future had, you know, where their paths finally had kind of crossed and really converged on each other, to kind of, you know, brushed up against each other. But I'm like kind of torn. I don't want to say it's the best of the ones we've seen so far, but my God, I feel like I'm starting to lean that way. And God, that's really hard because I still love X2. So it's tough, but I love when you can bring a whole cast together, when you can, you know, have so many great actors, past and present, in a movie, and they all can just bring such emotion to a role, know their role like the back of their hand, just completely, you know, nail it to a T. And it's just, I love everything about this movie. It feels like it, as I was watching this, I was thinking to myself, I'm like, yeah, this is a superhero film, right? But this felt like, I don't even know if this is a genre, because I don't think I've seen it. I could be wrong. I know my genres. I know a lot of them, but I don't know if this is a genre. This felt almost like an action drama movie. And because I don't know why, or like, just McAvoy's performance, I feel like in this one, is better than First Class. I feel like Fassbender, obviously, by this point, is more sinister than his role in First Class. Obviously, because First Class is setting up for this, but still.
Fassbender, I think everybody's better in this one.
I just think everybody took what they knew about their characters and just turned it up to 10. And that's what made this movie so well. It was just the actors brought their characters finally, like, full circle in this movie. So the only one that didn't get a lot of screen time is Storm. So, like, Halle Berry's Storm. But but she didn't need to. She's never had a lot of really screen time in the series. And that's just because you have so many actors, but you also, you know, people really, you know, want to see Hugh Jackman and Wolverine. You want to see, you know, both Professor X's. You want to see, you know, Ian McKellen be Magneto. So it's really cool. Just to see kind of them tie the whole entire storyline together with this movie, more or less, and to have everybody just be so great at playing their part and knowing their role that I'm going to think about it for a while because I can't think about it right now. This and X2 might be tied for my favorite. So I got to think about it, but I think the more I think about it, I think the more I might start giving the edge to this movie as probably my favorite in the series of the X-Men movies, not counting, you know, the Wolverine stuff, not counting Deadpool. We'll get to those.
Of X in the title is what we say.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So, you know, but I think the one so far, this might end up being my favorite one. So, I mean, I'm still not going to give it like a 9 out of 10, but and I know a lot of people will in terms of the series.
I definitely will. Yep.
I'm not going to say 8.5. I'll actually go right in the middle. I'll say like 8.8 out of 10. So I'll give it like a weird kind of rating, but 8.8 out of 10, just because it's so good. I love everything about it. It's hard. I'm like a Russian judge. You're not going to get, I don't know how you're going to get a 9 out of me. It's going to be really tough. I don't give those out a lot, but that's what I feel like with this movie. This movie is very close to that. And I think the more I think about it, the more I kind of go back and probably watch it and watch some of the scenes, I might give it a 9. It's that good. So, but I really like everything about this movie. So, yeah, I think I'll leave it there with that one.
Brandon, what is your favorite scene?
Oh, my God. I mean, I've said before, right, that I love the character of Beast. Yeah. To me, any scene that he's in makes it automatically better. I love the character in the comics as well as the movies. So, you know, it's pretty easy for me to pick any scene with him in it. But, I mean, just, oh, God, it's probably, man, I got to really think. Because there's a couple scenes, I mean, just the revisionist history of, like, them. Also the incorporation of the war themes, you know, Vietnam and what happened with JFK leading into Nixon and the Nixon administration and all that stuff. Like,
that was, you know, so cool.
That's really cool to kind of almost have like a revisionist history of the Nixon administration, kind of. And of course of JFK's assassination.
The bullet curved. It actually did in this universe. The
bullet curve. Probably the coolest scene, or the one I was like the most proud of, and where you could feel like the movie kind of obviously shifting. I mean, it's a pretty obvious moment in the movie, but when James McAvoy's Professor X refuses the serum, knowing that, you know, he's going to have to give up his legs permanently, pretty much, and that's what's going to turn him into the, you know, the obviously the wheelchair Professor X, and then the movie kind of just takes off from that point. So I think just the drama in that scene of him literally getting ready to put the needle in his arm and then just slamming it down and being like, you know, kind of, you know, sacrificing his self for the greater good, pretty much, is really cool. I love that might probably be my favorite, but I've always found it funny how Peter Dinklage plays such a menacing character in this movie. Despite, and it's funny to say menacing because obviously his height, but he's just, Peter Dinklage doesn't get enough credit for how good an actor he is. I think we just look at him as like a novelty, but he really is a good actor. Which is obviously rare, among that community, but God, it is so cool.
I never once, like in any of his scenes in that movie, saw him as like, oh, he's the shortest man in the room. No, he just walks in and it's like, oh, this guy's the boss. what I mean?
The way they framed him adds to it too.
That's what I was thinking. I'm like, it's so funny because you know who Peter Dinklage is, and it's like, it's weird. Whenever he showed up in a room, it's like, okay, he's like, he's the smallest, but yet somehow the biggest character in the room.
Yeah, he shows up and you're just like, oh, okay, that's about like, to go down.
It's so cool. I mean, I think maybe one of the most interesting scenes, and it kind of is jump scare-ish, I guess, for if you're a little kid, but when Wolverine, right when Michael Fassbender's Magneto is about to basically kill Mystique, and saying like, to protect their future, and Wolverine is basically slipping in and out of consciousness from that era. And so he's kind of the timelines are kind of merging and he's losing it. So, and
acid. You're on acid. Relax.
Yeah, he's like, he's like, are you on acid? Like, it's like that. He's like, he's like, who are you? He's like, are you sure you're not on acid? But that scene and the serum scene, refusing the serum, are probably my two favorite. I mean, I could say when Wolverine shows up to the house and they say, oh, there's no professor here, and he forces his way in. That's funny. An iconic scene in that movie, but you're
pretty strong for a scrawny kid.
Yeah, that's pretty good. But
come on, Beastie, come out.
But I love it. I mean, like I said, it's not. It might not get a 9. I mean, the more I think about it, it might. But I think for now, 8.8 out of 10. I think it's fine. And I'll probably re-rate it later. But I loved it. So.
Shane, what are your thoughts on this movie? This is you and I's favorite movie with X in the title. It's getting close for Brandon. What do you love about this movie, and what's your favorite scene?
Yeah, it's definitely my favorite. I think a good way to describe this movie in a blurb is it's a political drama, historical political drama that happens to have comic book characters in it, if that makes sense.
It's
because when you're watching, it's one of those few comic book movies where when you're watching it doesn't feel like a superhero movie.
Feels like this well done film that just happens to have superheroes in it. Another one like that would be the Dark Knight trilogy. I think you could, the Batman, Robert Pattinson's Batman, I think you could say that as well. Logan, that's another one, that's where that applies.
Can't wait for Logan. But anyways,
yeah. Oh, yeah.
Logan next week.
Yep. So, anyways, to me, this is another one of those. I think the blending of the old and the new cast is really well done, and you see just how perfect for the roles everybody is, because I mean you're literally seeing them side by side and how seamless it is, but also you can tell just by the two different performances, it's like, yeah, this is the same person, but they've lived, 40 years and gone through a lot in that time. And yeah, and you know, one of the scenes I really liked was when Charles, old and young, had their conversation.
Yeah,
that was really interesting, I thought, especially the way it was shot, how it was, you know, it had kind of that fade, and it was really bright and almost like dreamy looking. It just to sort of give a sense of illusion, or, you know, like an out of body experience, I guess. I thought that was really powerful. And another scene that I really liked was when they were in that kitchen, and then Quicksilver just obliterates everybody.
Oh,
and,
I forgot. Yeah, I was gonna say the same.
And you know, for him, it's all slow motion, but then for everyone else, it's just like, what the hell happened? That I thought that was really funny. But in any case, I mean, there's a lot of other scenes, though. The scene where they were all on the plane together, like, as dumb as it sounds, just a really good tense moment. And this movie's full of just good tension, character drama. And there's, you know, there's really good themes as well. Things like hope, which a lot of times is kind of a cheesy, you know, theme or message in a movie, but in this one it's really well done, because we've always viewed Professor X as, you know, at least in like the Patrick Stewart Professor X, he's like just the wise mentor figure who's all knowing, and you know, but I was like, well, how did he get here? You know, because
yep,
obviously he experienced quite a bit to get all this, and you know, you see this more human side of him and how much he really struggles. And I really liked that and how it humanized him. It just makes him a lot more relatable. And let's see, what else? I mean, Hugh Jackman, obviously great as the lead, being the guy that kind of to bridge the gap. What else? Some good. Yeah, the scene where Magneto is about to kill Mystique, that was really cool. Well, not cool, but you know what I mean. I'm very impressed with this movie. Every time I see it, there's really not that much action at all, but
yeah,
it's a movie that doesn't really need it, because the story is so interesting and it's this really deep drama and character piece, character study. You know, I'm not sitting there going like, okay, let's get an action scene. It's just, no, it just naturally progresses, and it's good. It's my fourth favorite comic book movie of all time.
We gotta my get favorite. That list.
Yes. My favorite movie in the X-Men universe that has the name X-Men in the title, as Robert said.
Yeah, that's how I'm leaning.
Yeah. I could go on for days about this movie, but that's kind of the gist.
Yeah, no, I think that movie's incredible. I gave it a 9 as well. Honestly, the more I think of it, my favorite scene is the ending, where he's like, you did it. And then he's like, did what? Right. And it's like, oh, yeah, you're back. But then the scene before it is like, morning, Logan. Late start. And it's like, oh my God, that's Kelsey Grammer. And there's everyone back at the end. And you're like, oh my God, there's Gene, there's Scott, there's Storm, there's Kitty, there's Ice, there's, you know, everybody. And apparently Rogue was going to be in this movie as well, but she didn't make the cut. I think she's in the Rogue cut, though. That's what it's called. But there is an extended cut called the Rogue cut of this movie, if any of you are interested, but which I haven't seen. I want to at some point. But no, I love every piece of this movie. I didn't love... The only thing I really didn't like was the past Sentinels. I'm not the biggest fan of that. The past battles aren't amazing, but they're still pretty good. The future battles are just so sick, though. They're so sick. But yeah, other than that, this movie is great. The scene where old Professor X meets Logan is really fun because he's like, oh, you can walk. And he's like, I thought Eric, and then he stops. So the Eric thing gets retconned, which is nice, where, you know, the thing in First Class. B says, I told you there was no professor here, and he talks about how he lost hope. Again, hope after Vietnam and everything. I thought that was really great. That's a great scene. There's so many great just individual moments, and then we can't be remiss about Quicksilver. What a fun introduction to him. Just wild. A great scene. Glad they got the music right as well for that scene. But overall, just a excellent, excellent film. And I'm excited to do Logan next week.
Yeah.
Logan's going to be great.
Sidebar real quick, but I don't think James McAvoy gets enough credit, not just in this role, but in general, for just how good he is.
Oh, yeah. He's insane.
As an actor, I think...
You want to see range, just watch Split.
Good point. Yeah. I mean, I think he's like probably one of the... I'm going to go there. I think he's one of the 10 most talented actors working today. Not actors and actresses, but just actors. So, guys. If you include actresses as well, he probably gets bumped down out of that list. But he doesn't get a lot of like big roles, seems like, but I'm like, well, maybe he should.
If anybody's interested, also watch him in It Chapter 2.
Ooh.
Yeah. That's yeah, really he was good. Yeah. Yeah, that talk about another cast that like the old version being a perfect pairing to the other.
Absolutely.
Well, except one of them. But.
Oh, yeah.
but yeah.
Next week's gonna be so much fun, though. Like, I know I'm gonna jump ahead a little bit, but Logan is probably my favorite of all the, not the X-Men titled movies, but the X-Men universe. I think Logan is my favorite movie.
It's gonna be
I was devastated when I couldn't see it in theaters. I wanted to go so badly to see it, and I didn't. And when I finally watched it for the first time, I think it was like maybe right as it came out on TV, maybe in 2019, something like that. I watched it. I sat through the commercials and everything. I was like, I gotta watch this movie. And I love it. I love it. I love everything about it. I've seen it. I think maybe two or three times. I can't wait for next week.
It's gonna be great. I'm excited for it. It's gonna lead us to Deadpool and Deadpool and Wolverine.
It's definitely not my favorite, just because it's depressing. But it's the best.
That's why I like it.
It's the best for sure.
Yeah, it's depressing.
That's why I like it.
When I think of my favorite, I think of something a little more uplifting. you know, something that I actually enjoy watching and something that I'm not like, oh, no, Logan. but you know, but yeah, no,
it's like our it's like our music taste all over again. Like ours was more depressing. And it's like yours was more uplifting. It's like, yeah, the movie taste goes with that too.
Yeah.
Yeah.
I'm excited for it. But thank you, Brandon. Yeah. Thank you, Shane, for helping me through this sickness.
Sure.
The podcast.
Absolutely, dude.
But I'll talk to you all soon, and we'll see you all next week.
All right. See you, everybody.
Sounds good. See you, everybody.